time to wake up. 8:15, and her mom was already getting everyone moving. 10 more minutes. We don't even need to be there till 9, she yelled out of a groggy stupor. Get up now, her mom fired back. And the fight was on. And this fight that was about to go down was pretty much a standard part of the week. You see, this didn't happen on most every other day of the week, but when Sunday hit, for some reason, you knew that the sparks were going to fly. Why Sunday? Well, it was because Sunday carried with it a peace that no other day of the week could boast, and that it was church day. Mom was a diehard that everyone needed to be in church every single week, even if that meant getting up at the ungodly hour of 8:15 a.m. And that is an ungodly hour. Can I get an amen? What kind of torture and inhumane treatment was this, she thought. Maybe she should call and get child services involved. Maybe not. Her big issue was that she didn't see the reason that church needed to be a part of her weekend routine. Why should she be forced to lose valuable sleep and relax time to drive to a building, sit in a chair, sing a song, listen to a guy talk, maybe shake a person's hand, eat a bagel, and then go home? And that was on a good week. That was on a good week. Never mind the traumatic times when her mom would say, hey, we're staying for Sunday school today, and she had to go and hang out with the youth group. Honestly, she thought, I would rather accidentally show up to school naked than go through that. Almost. As she mused on this slightly awkward scenario, she thought to herself that maybe she would like this weekly routine a little bit more if she saw the point, if she saw the value, if this church thing was more than just what seemed to be a purposeless, kind of boring routine. Maybe there was some value in what she was doing. Maybe there was some value, but she could not see it right now. So, with the voice of her mom bellowing from downstairs, she slowly and begrudgingly drug herself out of bed to start the arduous process of getting ready. Here we go again, she thought. Here we go again. Most students, most of you, maybe that actually sounded really familiar to how your day started off today. Maybe. Or is very, very closely resembling. But most students at some point in their life, especially in middle school and high school, will struggle with this concept of why in the world, why do I go to church? Why do I get up on Sunday mornings? Why do we do this thing? Now, when you're a little kid, you don't normally think about that, because when you're a little kid, you just kind of do what your family does, and if your family goes to church, you go to church, and you don't think much of it. But then you hit middle school, and you start asking, like, deep questions. And then you hit high school, and you really start asking questions, and you start really thinking, why am I doing this? For some, you think, this is absolutely purposeless. I don't understand the value of this. Why do we do this routine every day? And I'll say this. This is enhanced by the fact that I think that sometimes even parents, sometimes families, don't fully understand why they go to church. I think we have churches oftentimes that have a lot of people in it who don't really know exactly why they're there. Maybe it was a tradition that they got into and that they just kind of do a weekly routine week after week, and so it's just kind of the way it was. Maybe grandpa back in the day and great-grandpa back in the early day went to church, and so that's just kind of what we do. And so if you asked a family, they might say, well, I don't really know why we go. We just go. It's just part of what we do. It just kind of is a tradition that we have. And so sometimes what you have is people who are churches filled with people who come but maybe aren't super enthusiastic to really be there. But they keep coming, and they keep coming, and they keep coming. The question is this a good thing? Is this a good thing? I would argue that it's probably not a good thing. It's probably not a good thing if you're coming to a church and yet you're really unenthusiastic and not excited to be there. But at the same time, I will say this. We all go through periods of time. We all go through those seasons where it's not very exciting. Why am I here? Why am I doing this? Why? What's the purpose of me being here? Because I don't really see the purpose all the time. One of our visions here at FSM, you've heard me talk about it, and you'll hear me talk about it a lot more as time goes on. One of our visions here is that we would raise up students, that we would raise you up, that you have to have a value in the church. Okay? Ultimately, our vision is that we would raise you up in such a way that you end up loving the church. That's our vision. That's what we're trying to instill in you. Now, what do I mean by love the church? To love Faith Bible Chapel, yeah, I would like if you liked our church here. I would really love that. But beyond that, what I would love is that when you graduate, whether you stay at Faith Bible Chapel or whether you go to college somewhere else, that wherever you go, you understand and in your heart you have a value and a love for what the church is. And that you will never be like the so many thousands and millions of people who graduate and then the church is just kind of an afterthought for them as they go on with their life, and that maybe when they get married and have kids down the road, maybe they'll come back to church here and there, but it never is a value and it's never something that they love. That's not what we want. What I want for you is that when you graduate, that whether you stay here, whether you go, that the value and the love of the church is put into your heart. So if I could rewire your mind, if I could do a little magic trick, and if I could take you and I could rewire your mind and did something funky and made it so that you would always love the church and so that you would you'd have this value inside of you, I would love to do that. I'd take each and every one of you into a special room and we would do this concoction on your mind and it would be fabulous. Sounds a little creepy. I wouldn't make it creepy. It would be fun. But I can't do that. I can't do that, okay, for many, many reasons. But what I want to do is this, okay? And this is just one message and what will hopefully be, as you go on in FSM, something that we hit over and over and over again. But it's this idea. What I want to do is I want to present a metaphor today, all right? I want to lay out this metaphor of what the church is like. Now, what I'm about to talk to you about today, it's a good metaphor. It's very relatable. Now, I'm not going to say that it's all-inclusive of what the church is, but I think it's a really good picture for you. So my hope is that as I use this metaphor that you'll be able to say, oh, you have a different view of the church maybe than when you came in, okay? And maybe if you can grasp this, and maybe if God does something in your heart today even and really like speaks to you, and maybe through something I say or maybe through this illustration, maybe God will convict you in some kind of a way, and that maybe Sundays from now on, going down the road, it won't be as hard to get up maybe. Maybe you won't necessarily be like the girl in our story. Maybe you'll have a little easier time coming to church. And maybe you'll have a better understanding of why the church is so valuable. So I'm going to say a statement, and it's going to be our big bottom line, and then I'm going to move on, and we're going to come back to it. Here it is. You ready? The church is soil. The church is soil. Not soiled, like a diaper. Soil. The church is soil. Keep that in your mind. I'm going to come back to that. Let me do this really quick. This will be like the biggest fast forward you've ever seen in your life. I'm going to give you a fast forward history of the church. Are you ready? Buckle your seatbelts because this is going to get fast. The church was established after Jesus died and rose, okay, and Jesus ascended into heaven. The church was established after that. But Jesus knew that the church was going to be an entity, a thing. So when Jesus was on the earth, he talked about the church and he talks about it to Peter. And in Matthew, Jesus says this. He's talking to Peter and he says, I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall never prevail against it. So Jesus knew that there was this thing called the church that was coming. It wasn't there yet, but it was coming after he died. And Jesus was, his language is so strong. He says, listen, this thing called the church is coming, and it's so incredible that nothing's going to get in its way. Nothing is going to stop it. If the gates of hell can't prevail against something, that pretty much means it's going to last for a very, 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 very long time, okay? So, Jesus says the church is coming, it's not going to end, it's going to be this great thing. Hell itself is not going to be able to overcome it. So then we fast forward in the New Testament, and we read books like Acts, and we read the letters to churches, and so we see this thing called the church start to kind of form, okay? And we see kind of the first churches and how they operated and some of the struggles that they went to. But it came down to this. There was three things that the early church was about. Just three things. Really simple. It was about this. The early church was about Jesus, it was about one another, and it was about others. Jesus, one another, and others. The book of Acts tells us this, that the church in its early days, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, to fellowship, to breaking of bread, and to prayers. So they focused on Jesus. They focused on his teachings. How can they live more like him? So they focused on that. They focused on one another. How can I serve you? How can I love you? How am I supposed to relate to you now that I follow Christ? And then others. Hey, how do we take other people that don't know about what we know about and bring them into this thing that we call the church. That's what they were all about. Now, there was nothing like this before. There was never anything like that before that. Now, as time went on, the church changed in some ways, okay? The church changed. I don't have time to go into every single detail, but essentially, church changed in the way that it met. Okay, the early church met in houses. As time went on, churches started to meet in facilities such as this, not homes, okay? The form of the meetings changed, okay? So in the early days, we don't exactly know what they did, but it was probably far more informal than what we do today. So the method changed a little bit, the location changed, but if there's one thing that remained consistent, and if there was one thing that the early church had, and that hopefully churches have today, if there's one thing that's consistent, it's this, is that the church was supposed to be the soil in which a person's faith grew. That's what the purpose of the church was, to be the soil where a person's faith would actually grow. So this is what I mean when I say the church is like soil. The church is soil. The church is the soil for your personal spiritual life. God was going to grow people. He was going to call people to himself. They were going to be changed. They were going to come to know Christ. Their life was going to be changed. And then God was going to put them in these things called churches because God knew this is where they're going to grow. This is how I want them to flourish in their faith. This is how I want them to learn more about me and grow and become more like who I am. Students, look at me and listen to this. This is very important. You were never meant to grow spiritually as an individual. You were never meant to grow spiritually as an individual. This concept's sometimes hard to understand in our culture because we're a culture that really thrives on individualism, okay? Even to the point where sometimes it's even hard to understand that because it's so a part of our culture, but we're very focused on independence and individualism and individuality and that kind of a thing, but that was never how God intended for your Christian faith to exist. You were never supposed to exist just by yourself. You were always supposed to exist in community with other people. So I've heard people say, and you've probably heard people say this before, well, I'm a Christian, but I'm not involved in a church. Or I'm a Christian, but I don't go to a church or anything like that. I'm not involved in a church. It's very much an oxymoron to say that. It's very much an oxymoron to say that. You cannot be isolated in your faith and grow. You cannot be isolated in your faith and grow. It just doesn't happen because there are things that spiritually that you need that you cannot get apart from being a part of a church. Let me say that again. Really get your head around this. There are things that you personally need spiritually. There are things you need that you cannot get outside of being a part of a church. It just won't happen. You can't get it by being alone. You can't get it by just, you know, existing and saying, well, I'm a Christian because I believe in God, and there you go. You can't grow in a scenario like that. So let me present this metaphor for you, okay? I want you to think of your faith as a seed, okay? And let me go get my seed over here. I couldn't get this during the video. I tried, and I almost dropped this whole thing. So that would have been a disaster. So think of your faith like a seed. Now, the Bible uses, if you have faith as big as a mustard seed, that kind of thing. So here's the deal. I went to Home Depot. They don't have seeds anymore because it's almost winter. So I had to buy sunflower seeds and eat them to get these seeds. So this is a sunflower seed, but it's a seed nonetheless, okay? I want you to think of your faith as this seed, okay? And I'm going to just put it like right here, all right? You can't see it, but it's right there. I want you to think of that as your faith. And I want you to picture the church as this luscious soil that I have in this little tub right here, okay? Now, I want somebody to put their hand in. Who's brave and will put their hand in this? Put your hand in there and squeeze it. Like, yeah. That's good soil. That's good soil. It's moist, okay? It's dark. Anybody else want to touch some of this? Anybody want to eat it? Don't eat it. Put your hand there. Yeah, it's good, right? Good soil? Okay. Good. This is good soil, and I'll have it up here. So during worship, you can come and touch it as well, okay? Now, here's what I learned about soil. All right, let's just talk about real deal, what's in this thing. I learned this week, I learned that there are 12 essential, what's called micronutrients that are needed in soil for seeds to grow, all right? 12. It's fascinating. I'm going to name them for you. Nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, sulfur, magnesium, calcium, iron, boron, manganese, zinc, copper, and my favorite, because it's hard to say, molybdenum. Molybdenum. Say molybdenum. If you say it 10 times fast and can actually do it, maybe you'll get a candy bar later. Molybdenum, okay? So they're called micronutrients. They're elements. That's why, now think of this. That's why when you eat soil, you won't die, because we need all that stuff for us as well, okay? Soil needs that stuff for this little seed to grow. Now, those are the things that are inside the soil. But I learned this too, and this was fascinating. There are three things that are needed outside of the soil in order for that seed to grow. Those three things are carbon, oxygen, and hydrogen. These are the three things that work outside of the soil, but they work through the soil, with the soil. And that's how plants grow. That's how we get the plants that we have. How valuable is this soil right here for this seed? It's incredibly valuable. It's incredibly valuable because if it doesn't have it, what happens? It doesn't grow. It doesn't grow. What happens sometimes, though, you guys, is that Christians think that the seed of their faith doesn't need soil. They think, I'm fine on my own, I'm fine, I don't need anything to help me grow, I don't need the church. And what ends up happening is they become just this, a seed. That seed will just sit there on this nice podium, and it will sit there for years and years and years. It might rot away, or it'll just stay stagnant, but it will never grow unless it makes its way into that soil. It just won't happen. Sometimes what happens is this as well. Sometimes what happens with Christians is that maybe they sort of understand that, you know, the church is important, but they say, you know what, I know the church is important, but I don't think every piece of the church is important. I don't know if that's for me, or I don't know if this is for me, or anything like that. They decide that certain parts of the soil are not for them. Now, this is interesting because what I learned this week was that those 12 nutrients in this soil have to be in perfect proportion to one another. So what that means is this: if you have too much nitrogen, it's going to impact the way that seed grows. If you have too little nitrogen, it's going to impact the way that it grows. If you have too much zinc or boron or whatever it is, if you have them in too much or too little amounts, it impacts the way that the seed grows. It was fascinating. There's actually, with each element, there's a different thing that will happen to the plant or to the seed based on if there's too much of it or if there's too little of it. For some seeds, for some of the elements, if it's too little, the plant just simply will not grow at all. For some of them, if there's too much of it, the plant will still grow, but it will have the appearance of life. It'll look like it's alive, but it won't produce any fruit. So it looks like it's good on the outside, but it's actually dead. It's lifeless. It's fruitless. It will not ever become what it was intended to be. There's a good metaphor right there, I would say. What happens when we as Christians don't find value in the church? What happens is that when we don't find value in the church, when we don't see its importance, when we're not a part of it, when we don't invest ourselves in that soil, what happens to us, you guys, is that we stop growing. We become Christians like this seed. We exist, but we don't grow. We don't have impact. We don't produce fruit. Or we have the appearance of growth. We have the appearance of what looks like growth, but we're fruitless. We don't have any fruit being produced in our lives. I have a friend, great guy, once told me he was a Christian, but he had a real, he didn't like the church. And he said, I'm not involved in a church. Almost like, gosh, why would you even be involved in it? I'm a Christian. I hate the church, okay? And he didn't want to be involved in one. And here's what I did. I watched him over the years, and there was something that I noticed about him. He looked great on the outside. Good personality. He was fit, winsome in his personality. But he had no fruit on the inside. Absolutely had no fruit on the inside. Now, I could take that a step further, and I won't go there, but the Bible actually talks about this. If you say you're a follower of God, and yet you don't love the people of God, you're a hypocrite. The Bible actually talks about that. We're not going to go down that way today. But it's for this reason that Paul talked about the church so much. In the New Testament, Paul wrote most of the letters, most of the books that we have, and all of them almost are related to either coaching a church or directing the church or talking about the value of it. Paul understood that for a person to grow in their relationship with Christ, the church was an essential part of that. My friend thought the concept of church was all about him. He thought that the church was about finding a place that fit his preference and entertained him and made him feel good and was something that, you know, he had, you know, could connect with in a certain way. He didn't realize that it was more than that. The church was way, way, way more and beyond that. In the book of 1 Corinthians, Paul writes this. He says this, "For the body," and the body, when I'm talking about the body, he's talking about the church. "For the body does not consist of one member, but many members." Remember how I said that you can't be a Christian as an individual? You weren't meant for that. You were made to be a part of a group, a church of other believers. So in other words, what this verse is saying is this: when it comes to your faith, it's not all about you. It's not all about you. It's not all about me. It's not all about how I feel necessarily. It's not about that. And just like the seed, this little guy here would be, he'd be silly if he'd say, "I don't need zinc," or "I don't need copper," or it's silly for Christians to say, "I don't need the church. I don't need what the church has. The church has nothing to offer me." It's silly to say that, absolutely silly. Paul goes on in 1 Corinthians, and he says this, "As it is, God has arranged the members in the body, each one of them as he chose." Talking about the church, God has actually ordained this. He's actually created this, and he's actually positioned people in certain places. "If all were a single member, where would the body be? As it is, there are many parts, yet there is one body." What are the ramifications of this truth that Paul talks about? It's this: the church is the soil for your growth. The church is the soil for your growth. When you come together with other believers, and when you're in the context of a church and you're involved and invested, that is actually the soil that will grow your faith. But this verse actually speaks even more than that. And it says this, that you are actually the soil for the faith of others. You personally are. You invest in the church because it's the soil for your faith, but while you do that, then you actually become the soil for others' faith. See, the church, the idea of the church is this: we all need one another. We all need one another. You don't just need me because I'm the pastor. No, I need you just as much as you need me. And you need each other just as much as you need me, as I need you. We need each other. We all need each other. Look to the person to your right. Look to the person to your left. Look behind you. Look in front of you. Okay? You need that person. They need you. Now, you might not be friends with that person. You might not like that person. They might not be whatever, their personality might rub you wrong. That doesn't matter. You need what they have because God has given them something that's soil for your faith. And you are the soil for somebody else as well. I think that's kind of cool. Paul goes on in 1 Corinthians. He says this, "The eye cannot say to the hand, 'I have no need of you.' Nor again, the head to the feet, 'I have no need of you.' That would be silly if they did that. But God has so composed the body," God has so composed the church, "that there may be no division in the body, but that the members may have the same care for one another. If one member suffers, everybody suffers. If one member is honored, then all rejoice together." Here's what Paul's talking about. He's talking about this church as being something that's actually beyond just a building that you go to and a place you go and you sit and then you leave. It's talking about how the church is actually a place where unity happens. Where love for one another grows. and where we practice and learn what it means to be in relationship with one another. We're in this together. We're in the church together. I might not be a hand, but I might be an arm, and I need you, who are the hand, if I'm going to be able to function, if I'm going to be able to do what I need to do. That was a weird motion there. last verse that Paul writes, he says, that I'm going to cover, he says this: now you are the body. In other words, you are the church of Christ, and individually, you're members of it. And God has appointed in the church, this is good stuff right here, God has appointed in the church. That means this. That means that the church is not an accidental thing. It's not just a cultural thing that we do in America just because. So don't let anybody ever talk you out of or say that, oh, the church is a man-made thing that man just kind of created. No, no. The church is God's thing that he uses us in. It says this: God has appointed first apostles, then second prophets, third teachers, then miracles, then gifts of healing, helping, administration, and various other kinds of tongues. This is so incredible to me. These things that Paul mentions are like the specific elements in soil. When I read those, I thought, man, just like soil is comprised of those 12 different things that are needed for a plant to grow, the church has different positions, I guess you could say, in them that are needed for a church and for the people in it to grow. We need apostles. We need prophets. We need teachers. I'm going to explain what those are in just a minute. Apostles, they set the vision and direction for a church. Prophets, they bring truth. Teachers help bring understanding. Miracle workers and those who have the gift of healing, they reveal God's tangible work in our lives. Administrators, they keep everything organized and running. And all of these things work together and create a soil like this wherein your faith can grow. That's cool. Now, I want to say this. All of you have gifts. All of you have gifts. If there's one thing that if you've been in FSM for a short time or if you're going to be in here a long time, if you're a freshman, I would be so upset if you walked out of here and you weren't, and if we didn't at least like pour into you as often as we could, the fact that you have gifts and you have something that God wants to use inside of you. That would make me so sad if you left and never realized that. But I want you to know, you have gifts. You have things that God has given you for the benefit of others and for the church. Some of you are prophets. Some of you are prophets. Now, I don't want you to get all weirded out and think that that's some weird thing that you're just going to like stand up randomly and start screaming stuff. No, that's not what a prophet is. But some of you can hear what God is saying for somebody else. Not audibly, but you get thoughts in your mind for other people, and you need to act on, you need to use that gift. That's a gift that the church needs. I need that from you. If you're a prophet here, and you get a thought, man, I think God wants to tell Zach this. Man, I would really hope that you would come and tell me so that my faith can grow, so that my faith can be built up. Some of you are future apostles in this room. You're future leaders, like you're future visionaries for the church. Some of you in this room right now have the gift of healing. Like you have, God's just given you a gift that when you pray for people, there's something about this gift that God's given you that people are healed. You need to be operating in that gift. See, the church is the place where these gifts that you have are realized and where they're practiced and where when they're used, it grows the faith of others. It grows your faith and it grows my faith. But what happens when you come into church? What happens when people come into church and they come in and they unplug themselves and they disconnect themselves and they sit far off? And they kind of put the church at a hand's distance. And they say, I don't have anything to offer the church, and the church certainly has nothing for me. What happens? We all lose out. I lose out. You miss out as well. So I'm going to wrap it up right here. And worship team, you can get into place. If the church is the soil for your faith, then you need the church, and the church needs you, and we need each other. And as we realize this more and more, and that's my hope, is that we realize this more and more and more as we go on in FSM, that we understand the value and the purpose more so of the church. And my hope is that this, that you would grow in your love for the church, that your love for the church would actually begin to grow. I need your gift. I need what you bring, because if you're not using your gift, then we're not fully functioning as we should be functioning. And if I'm not bringing my gift, then we're not functioning. And then we're a soil that's not a balanced soil, okay? That's what we want. We want to be a balanced soil where our faith and the faith of others can grow. This whole idea of the church, you guys, is one of the big reasons why we're making the change in 2016 with FSM. This is one of the reasons why we're changing and not doing our main gathering time on Sundays at this time. This is one of the reasons why we're doing that, because if this is all true, and if the church is like a soil, then if we just remain in this context, then we're unbalanced. Because see, we've got great stuff here, but we need what the older folks across the bridge have. We need that. We need that for our lives. And guess what? Do you know what? They need what you bring. They need that. They need that for their faith to grow. You need the peace they bring. They need the peace that you bring. So I wonder if the girl in the story at the very, very beginning, I wonder if that girl would have had an easier time getting out of bed on Sunday if she understood that she wasn't coming to a building to sit. She wasn't coming just to a gathering that she was forced to go to. But I wonder if her perspective would have changed if she just had this thought that, you know what, I'm going to a place where that is soil, where I plant myself and then my seed of my faith actually grows. I wonder if it would have been easier for her to get out of bed. I wonder if she understood the value of the church, that she would maybe think that the church is less of an indispensable activity that maybe she could take or leave, but something that she vitally needed and had to be a part of. I wonder if she would understand the value of the church, then I wonder if when she woke up, she'd realize that it's not simply about her going somewhere to just receive stuff, but it's actually about her going and using the gifts that she has in order to build up and be a soil for the faith of other people. I wonder. If she understood this, maybe she would have gotten out of bed a little easier. And maybe if we all understand that, maybe if we all start to grasp that a little bit more, maybe it'll make coming to church easier for us as well. And maybe when we make this shift in 2016, maybe all of us will understand that what we're doing and being across the bridge is not about being with the adults that are in the boring service, or, oh, it's not about, oh man, I just got to go and sit and listen to a boring message. Maybe we'd realize that it's not about that. Maybe we'd realize that it's more about planting ourselves in the soil, a balanced soil, and then us ourselves contributing to that. See, the church in the early days was about three things. Remember, it was about Jesus, it was about one another, and it was about others. So my hope and my prayer is that we as FSMs understand the value of church, that we start to, that we grow to love the church, and that in that our faith is able to grow, we're able to help in the growth of the faith of others.